Blog Talk Radio.
Healing rain is coming down. It's coming nearer to this old town. Rich and poor, weak and strong. It's bringing mercy. It won't be long.
This is your host, Randy Goble. So glad to be with you on this Independence Day, the 4th of July, 2013. Hello, Canada. So nice to be in your province today. It is a pleasure. And thank you so much, my good friend, producer, Kel Fritzy, for making this possible. It is Freedom Day, Monday, July 1st, with Canada Day. And I welcome Canada and everyone in the United States. And today we're talking about freedom. It is a pleasure to be with you on this program today. This is my first Blog Talk Radio event, and I'm excited and a little bit nervous at the same time, but I have a very capable producer. Her name is Kel Fritzy. You know her from the Red Fox Blogger Network, a very fine lady, knows an awful lot about the subject of Islam and many of the issues that we're facing today. And so, Kelly, thank you so much for this event. I want to talk to you a little bit about who I am in case you haven't heard my last interview I did with Kel. My name is Randy Noble, and I'm an internet author of, so far now, 6 books. And about 3 years ago, I got this vision for writing books again. I think when I was a kid, 15 years old, teenager, I loved to write. I would sit down at my old typewriter in those days, and now you know how old I am. I would sit down at the typewriter and just start writing. And I put that on the shelf for a while. And it wasn't until just 3 years ago, I just got this sudden urge and vision to write. And the subject of Islam was right in the center of my vision. I wanted to talk to Muslims. I love Muslims. I think this is something I share with Kelly. We're both passionate about Muslims. But we really don't like what Islam does to them. So I remember sitting down and I was thinking, how do I talk to them? And I remember, because I work at Family Christian Bookstore, we try to connect our customers with people through World Vision. It helps our kids all over the world in poverty situations, and we connect our customers with them so they can sponsor a child and help them out. And I have this story in my mind about this sponsor, a Christian man who sponsors this young Muslim girl in Bangladesh. And I started thinking, I got this idea. Why not write a story about this Christian man who sponsors this Muslim child and goes to visit her and just to share his faith with her? And then one day, they're separated by years in time. One day she comes to the United States to visit him. And this idea came about talking to Muslim women. And I remember the story. I wanted to come up with an idea for what could I call the story. And I had the idea for veil. Well, you know, if you know anything about Islam, they wear the hijab, the veil. And they do that for piety reasons. They are not allowed by the Quran to reveal their beauty to anyone but their husband and family. And so I took the idea of the veil and I said, what if this Muslim girl has this vision of Jesus and wants to know more about him, but she's a little bit of afraid to do that because in Islam, Jesus is nothing more than a prophet. And she has this vision of Jesus coming to her. And she wants to know more than what she's taught in Islam. She has this hunger and thirst. What do I call that? And the title Beyond the Veil came up. Seeing who God is beyond the veil, beyond that tradition of Islam. And so my first book was born. Well, since then, I've written six. And when I was in the middle of writing Beyond the Veil, I got this idea for talking to Muslims in Iran. And I wanted to find a way to talk to them. And I thought, well, I'll write this book. It's going to go on the shelf at Family Christian. It'll go up on Amazon. But I really wish I could talk to Muslims in Iran. And someone 3 years ago said, why don't you get on Facebook? Duh, there you go. Well, wait a minute, get on Facebook. You can talk to Muslims in Iran on Facebook. And so the whole idea for the subject of freedom in Iran was born on that day. And it has been the most exciting journey I've had in 3 years. Well, we're talking about freedom today. But before we get to this vast philosophical and theological topic, let me just tell you a little bit about why I call the program Cross in the Desert. You may be wondering why. Well, when you think of a desert, you think of this parched, dry place where you see people hungry and thirsty, and they have all these mirages and visions hoping to find water, right? You think of a desert that way. What do you mean the cross in the desert? Well, the cross is a symbol of hope for Christians. It's a symbol of freedom, since we're talking about freedom today. It's a symbol of forgiveness, salvation. But wait a minute, this person in the desert sees a cross. What's that going to do for him? Well, the Bible is filled with imagery. It comes to the water, drink of the well. If you're thirsty, come. Just like the song you heard in the open, Healing Rain. Can you imagine that healing rain of God's love coming down in raindrops in the desert and quenching that thirst? Well, that's why I call it the cross in the desert. Jesus is the hope for freedom and salvation to the weary, parched traveler who's in the desert. And so I hope that kind of helps you. Well, I'm so excited today, and I just want to talk to you and share my heart with you. There are so many issues on my mind. A little bit later on the broadcast, I'm going to connect you with my good Facebook friend, Negma Abedini. Now, and just in case you don't know who she is, let me give you a little filler information. Negma is the wife of Saeed Abedini. Saeed Abedini and Negma met in Iran, and they're both Christians. And at the time they met in Iran, Negma was already an American citizen, and she met her future husband there in Iran. They immediately clicked and connected because they love Muslims and they want to share Christ with them. Well, a few years later, they were married. And in 2004, they just celebrated their 9th anniversary. Well, it was last summer that Saeed, he was dedicated to helping Iranians, was given permission and approval by the Iranian government to go into Iran and help build an orphanage. Here was the catch to that. He was once a member of the house church movement in Iran. It is against the law in Iran for a Muslim to convert to any other religion, especially Christianity. Well, Saeed had a personal visitation by Jesus, and in that vision, he was told to go to Muslims and share Christ with them. And he took that very seriously. Well, because he was involved with the house church movement, what Iranians did when he came back to Iran in 2012 to help build orphanages, the Revolutionary Guard arrested him. And he was under arrest up until January and was given an 8-year sentence in Iran's notorious Evin prison. Since then, NGMA has been working with Jay Sekulow with the American Center for Law and Justice and working on Facebook, and she has a big support team of dedicated people and Christians all over the world praying for her husband. And also, there was a petition that was issued through the ACLJ where we can actually sign the petition to pressure the Iranian government for his release. Later on in this broadcast, I want you to hear CBN in this very good interview with NGMA and what life is like for her, apart from her husband, who is imprisoned in Iran. Now, and think with me just for a second, because we hear an awful lot about persecution in the world, the turmoil that's going on in Egypt, the things that are happening where freedom is so limited and so hard to come by. Today, I would ask you to do two things. When you hear this interview, please respond and sign the petition to free Saeed. And yet, most importantly, pray for his release. He is a representative of thousands of Christians. In fact, probably even more, imprisoned for their faith all over the world. And today, you and me are sitting in the comfort of our home, enjoying this broadcast, waving the flag of freedom. And people like Saeed, Asia Bibi in Pakistan, Bahira Hidayat in Iran, Farshad Fathi in Iran, Nazarin Satuda, suffering in Evin prison. Please remember them today, because that's what this broadcast is all about. I want to connect with you, with people all over the world suffering for their faith, for people all over the world who don't have the freedom that we celebrate today. And I hope through this broadcast to bring faces to them, to put a face on them so you can get to know them. And you can do two things. You can go to my Facebook page and sign a petition and make your name known that you want their freedom, that you're standing in prayer for their freedom. Speaking of freedom, the cross in the desert is about speaking hope and freedom to Iranians. I mentioned earlier, get on Facebook, talk to Iranians. I want to tell you something today. My heart and soul is connected to them. I know my friend and co-host has a love and passion for Iran. And Kel, you know how you feel about that. I join with you feeling the same way. So what I want to do in this broadcast today is to connect you with my friends in Iran. I want you to get to know them in a special way, because I want to share their heart with you. You see, this is a program we're going to talk about a lot of issues in Iran, in the persecuted church, all over the world. We're going to talk about these issues. And today I want to focus in on them, because I made a pledge to them. I want to be their voice for hope and freedom. You see, I want to introduce you to what goes on in Iran so you understand why there is not much hope and how there's very little freedom. And I want to do this in one way. We hear so much about the nuclear situation, but I want to put a face on the friends that I talk with every day. I want you to get to know them. And so what we're going to do right now, we're going to take this short little break, and I want you to hear a song that weaves the theme of freedom for us today. And this is a song by a great Christian band, White Heart. It's called Independence Day. Enjoy.
Where we stand.
Day. I hope you enjoyed that. A song that really blesses me when I think of Independence Day. I want to talk to you, like I mentioned, connect you with my friends in Iran and talk about them, because that's what the cross in the desert is all about. About a year ago, I began a project called The Rose of Nowruz, Dreams of Hope and Freedom. And this book is based on the experiences my friends in Iran have shared with me. It's the story of Behera, a violin player who becomes a woman freedom fighter in the midst of the turmoil and suppression of freedom in Iran. And as I began to write this book, I thought about the people that lived there. I wanted to put them on display. And I have a quote here from a lady who is a woman's rights activist. Her name is Shabnam. No, I'm going to butcher her last name, Madazadi, but she is currently serving a prison term for standing up for the rights of women in Iran. You may say, why are there so few rights for women in Iran? Well, you know anything about Iran, you know they're Islamic. And there's some things you need to know about what the Quran says about women and why this is such a prevalent doctrine in Iran. Even though Iran would like to say there's freedom, we're going to talk about that in a minute. Well, Islam says the testimony of two women is equal to one man. So it takes two women to equal the testimony of one man. Also, the Quran talks about women in the context of being in submission to their husbands, but wait, Surah chapter 4 says the man is superior to the woman, and he's the guardian of the woman. And the woman, her best lot in life in pure Islam, fundamentalist Islam, is to be a homemaker, stay at home. She cannot travel alone. She has very few rights. And one of the things in chapter 4 of the Quran, Surah chapter 4, is if the woman is suspected by the husband, is suspected for being unfaithful, the man will admonish her, cause her to sleep in a separate bed, and if needs be, beat her. The word is there, beat. Now, some of the theologians, Islamic scholars, like to use the word beat lightly, but it means the same thing. So when you think about the implications of the view of Islam on women, you need to also understand that in some documents, the Hadith, that is the teachings of the saints of Muhammad, Muhammad at one point was given a vision of hell. And in the vision of hell he was given, according to Muhammad in his own testimony, the majority of dwellers there were women. And this is the Islamic view of women based on the Quran, the teachings of Muhammad. This is not my idea. This is why I do the cross in the desert, to expose the suppression of women. So in Iran, women don't have the rights. You may think they do. In Iran, they don't have the freedom to speak publicly and disagree with the government. That includes men as well. And a woman in Iran, of course, cannot divorce her husband. Interesting, but according to the Quran, a man may marry a non-Muslim, but a woman cannot. So you see the view of women, no matter what some Muslims would say and try to contradict what I said, this is the true Islamic view of women. And so I'm thinking of my friend Shabnam, who's in Evin prison. And she said something about freedom that really bears mentioning today, since our topic is about freedom, Independence Day. She writes, "One day, freedom shall chant a song more eternal than a melody. One day, all these chains, tortures, and prisons will give birth to a child from its bosom, a child named freedom." You see, Shabnam, in the midst of her shackles and chains, is saying this: "I have hope that one day there will be freedom." Iran is Islamic. You can't convert to any other religion. You must remain Muslim. It's against the law. It's called the sin of apostasy. You can't speak out, publicly disagree with the government. You find yourself in chains like Shabnam if you do. If you go on the internet and you're a blogger and you write critical of the government, you run the risk of being captured and put in prison. Just a year and a half ago, a blogger was arrested. He was in prison for being critical of the government. He was on Facebook, and he eventually found himself in Evin prison. A few months later, he was also found dead. Now, of course, Iran denied that he died of any torture or beating. But all Iranians know that that's not the case. So freedom is a gift you and me have and we're enjoying today. But many of my friends in Iran are fighting and struggling and hoping, like Shabnam, that one day freedom will be born. That's why I wrote The Rose of Nowruz, to put them in the spotlight. And they need the hope and freedom. I love what one of our past presidents said about freedom. Ronald Reagan, I'm a Reaganite. He said, freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it to our children in the bloodstream. It must be fought for, protected, and handed on for them to do the same. Ronald Reagan also said, man is not free unless government is limited. Oh, I wish I could convince my Obama supporters of this. Man is not free unless government is limited. Why? Why do they want this hope and change? Why do they want all of these free things from the government? We're all paying a price here in America. You see, we're fighting for our freedoms too. We're free. But we're fighting to keep freedom alive. Our current president doesn't see things the way that Ronald Reagan did. How I wish for more presidents like Ronald Reagan and George Bush to be at the helm, because they believed, like Ronald Reagan, man is not free unless government is limited. Well, not to get off on a tangent, because I could. Let me go back to Iran. It's so easy to do that. In Iran, the government and religion are one entity. There is no separation of church and state. And so you understand why there is very little freedom there. Not too long ago, I wrote a blog about my dear friend Nahid. Let me tell you a little bit about Nahid. Nahid is my Facebook friend. She's a lovely, lovely lady, an English supervisor. And she also takes care of children. And she emails me as well as chats with me, and she shares her heart about the struggles for living in Iran. And I want to share this blog with you. But one thing I want to do right now is open up the phone lines if you want to call. If you're a guest from the United States, you can call at 347-237-4318. In Canada, it's 213-943-3434. I hope you'll join me and we can talk about freedom today. But like I mentioned, my friend Nahid lives in the heart of Tehran. And one of the struggles my friends have is getting up on Facebook. I didn't know if you knew this or not. In Iran, Facebook is filtered. That means it's illegal. You can't get up there without some help. And it's called VPN. It's software that you have to purchase and use to get up on Facebook. Interesting that the government sells that, but they themselves have to use it to get up and do their propagating. But Facebook is a filtered entity in Iran. And just recently, I've read reports that Iran wants to create a national internet so they can combat the idea for Iranians getting up on Facebook. They can combat the idea for Iranians getting on YouTube and any other place. They want to control. You see, that's what a dictatorship is. We're going to talk about that election in just a minute, but I want to read this log to you. This is something I want to read because I want you to hear my heart about it. It's about what our program is about today, the precious gift of freedom. And Jesus said, and you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Do you remember the movie Braveheart?
And hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is the producer of Randy's show. Randy's call has dropped, but I'm sure he will be calling in very shortly. I really am very proud of the show that Randy's doing. He's bringing a very important message to people out there about the plight, especially of those of the people in Iran. Now, while we wait for Randy to call back in, he did want to share with you an interview from the 700 Club with Negma Abedini. She is the wife of Pastor Saeed. So let us carry on with that.
Last June, Nagma Abedini said goodbye to her husband Saeed as he set off on a trip. She never imagined that 12 months later she'd be in the middle of a fight for his freedom and his life. Nagmay Abedini is living a nightmare. Last July, her husband, American pastor Saeed Abedini, was in Iran to help establish an orphanage when he was arrested by Iranian authorities. Then, in January, he was sentenced to 8 years in Iran's infamous Evin prison. His crime? Preaching the gospel. Saeed has endured physical and psychological abuse and has been denied medical treatment. Nagmay says at times, the strain over the past 12 months has seemed unbearable for her and her two young children.
I was in the edge of extreme depression and anxiety and worry. And I could see that where I was almost being broken, like just I would have had to check myself in. But the Lord didn't let me break.
The American Center for Law and Justice has been fighting for Saeed's freedom. Nagmay believes that through prayer, it will be God, not the government, who will free her husband.
And please welcome to the 700 Club, Nagmay Abedini. It's great to have you here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, tell us the latest on your husband. Has anybody seen him, and how is he holding up?
Mm-hmm. His family gets to see him every week, so they saw him this week, and he was doing okay. He's still, he's had some beatings, and so he still has issues with his internal bleeding. He's much better, but there's still pains, and we're still hoping to get him treated for his physical pain.
Is he in solitary confinement?
No, he was in solitary early May, and they were supposed to keep him there for 20 days, but they ended up keeping him for 10 days, and it was a way to break him and have him mm-hmm. repent of his faith and deny Christ. And he actually came out of solitary, even though he went in with a lot of pain and bleeding, and he actually came out much better. He had mm-hmm. had an encounter with God, but he still he's had a few beatings, and he still needs medical attention.
Well, Iran has a new president, President Rouhani. Is this good news at all for your husband, or will it factor in at all?
You know, he at the same day he was elected, there was a Christian sentence to a few years in prison. I above Rouhani is the supreme leader, Khamenei, who really controls everything, and his mindset, his policy towards Christianity has always been the same, that they see it as a national threat, security to their national threat to their national security. And I don't see much of a change. I hope they try to bring more freedom for the Christians and really Saeed, but
right now you don't think it'll make much of a difference.
I don't think it's going to make much of a difference. Mm.
Nagmay, you were born in Iran to Muslim parents, mm-hmm. Grew up Muslim. How did you become a Christian?
God's grace. I was always seeking him. I grew up when I was very young in Iran, and there was a war, and there was bombs, and people were dying around me. There was a war with Iran and Iraq, and I always that made me think about who is God, where is he, and I tried to find him through Islam and at the young age, 8 or 9, mm-hmm. and when I came to the States, my brother had a vision of Christ, and he said, "I'm the way, the truth, and the life." And my
and you were young, right?
We were 8 or 9, mm-hmm. and Jesus said, you know, and he felt such a strong love. And when he saw that vision, he came to me and he told me, and he was a changed person. And so
you got saved based on your brother's dream about Jesus.
But it was we're twins, so we're so close. Mm. So I just saw he was so shaken, and so I accepted Christ at that age.
Talk about childlike faith.
Yeah, and it's mm-hmm. been, you know, it's been an amazing journey. My parents thought, they were very angry. They secluded us from friends. We couldn't see any friends. We couldn't go to church. We couldn't have a Bible for most of, from 9 till I was 18, and they mm-hmm. thought they're going to forget about this. They've just been brainwashed by the West. And I never forgot about him, and he's always been in my heart, and he's always been directing me and guiding me, and even without a Bible or without any fellowship, he's always been there.
Well, how did you meet Saeed?
Soon after September 11th, November of 2001, actually earlier that year, in summer of 2001, the Lord had really put on my heart to go back to Iran, and I purchased the ticket for October of 2001. And in September 11, when the attacks happened in New York, Everyone said, maybe you shouldn't go back. It's dangerous in the Middle East. But I felt the Lord telling me to go back to share the gospel with the Muslims, to be, love on them and share about Christ.
And when you first saw him, I mean, you'd been praying for a man who wasn't ordinary.
No, yes, I've been praying. I said, Lord, I don't care about money. I don't care about status. I want someone who's passionate, sold out to you. And I would have never thought that, I'm so blessed to have Saeed as my husband, but I would have never thought he'd be so passionate. And when I met him, he was just a worshiper and such a prayer warrior. And I just loved his passion for Christ.
Nagme, what was he doing? Exactly what was he doing when he was arrested last summer?
He was working on an orphanage that a government approved. He was working with the government to start. We started on the orphanage since 2009, and the kids and I had gone back with them in 2011 and stayed for a few months hoping the orphanage would be open.
He was there under government approval.
Yeah. They had approved it. He was working with them.
Yeah. Now, you have two young children. How are they coping? I know they must be missing their dad terribly.
Oh, it's been hard. Recently, I shared a video on my Facebook that shows Jacob crying, saying, Jesus, I love you, bring daddy home. Mm. And he's just in tears. And they sent out balloons and messages to Jesus saying, bring him home. And, like childlike faith, they prayed. And then they wake up. And sometimes they had a dream, and they look around. And they say, is daddy home yet? And I say, no, we just got to wait. I try to speak to them from the Bible about patience.
But you believe he will come home?
I do. I've had to, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, I've had to say, I believe God's going to deliver. But even if he doesn't, he's still a good God. And I've had to really lay it at the altar. I've learned to not control situations or push God for a certain outcome. And just to let go and say, God, you are a good God. You've been so gracious and kind to us during this time. And whatever the outcome, I do hope he's going to come home. But whatever the outcome, God's still God.
And you have been so strong for your kids. But you've just been strong in general. You've been on every TV show. You've been in front of Congress. You've been to the UN working tirelessly to educate people and to let them know what's happening to your husband. How do you do that? Where do you get the strength?
From Christ. I was a crumbling mess, and I found a connection to the vine. And the Bible says, when we find that connection, the fruit comes. And I have to say, one of the highlights, it's been a year since I physically held my husband and said goodbye. We said on June 22nd of 2012, I said a quick goodbye. I said, see you in a few weeks, never thinking. But I look at the year, speaking before the UN, I got to share about Christ. I got to say, Christ, Saeed is in prison because he believes Jesus Christ died for the sin of humanity, and whoever believes in him can be reconciled to God. I got to say that in front of 196 countries, and as I was speaking, they had earpieces, and it was being translated in their language, and they got to hear. I know the Lord has given me strength to fight for my husband, but also he's given me a platform to share his gospel where the UN might have never had this straightforward message about the gospel. And they were talking about peace and bringing world peace. And I got to share that this is the only way. And the end of the message, I said, and this is the God of peace you're all looking for. And so it's been amazing to the platform God has given me to fight for my husband, but also really to share the gospel, which is what this world needs. Mm. Our world is getting darker and darker. And
well, you're such an inspiration that you can focus on that. And we admire you so much, and our prayers are with you. And I know millions around the world are praying for your husband's release, which we pray does come very soon.
Amen.
Nagme, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
And to find more about Pastor Saeed and how you can help in the fight for his release, just log on to our website at cbn.com.
That was a very special interview with Nagme and Abedini and with the co-host of the 700 Club. I hope that it resonated with you like it did with me. I can't visualize how this courageous woman does what she does every day. She has to raise her two children by herself. Little Jacob and Rebecca miss their father terribly. And as you heard in the interview, to spend that first wedding anniversary apart is heartbreaking. Just less than a month ago that Nagme was at the United Nations Embassy in Geneva, and she had just a minute or two to make an announcement about the plight of her husband to be free from Evan prison. And in that announcement that she made, she also shared her faith as a Christian. It was an unbelievable 2 minutes that she had to tell the world not only about Saeed and his plight, but also about the good news of Christ, and she did that. I really, really pray that you can get involved in helping NGMA. The most important way you can get involved is signing the petition at Save Saeed, S-A-V-E-S-A-E-E-D, SaveSaeed.org. You just click on that, and you can find your way to the petition. Or you can go to my Facebook page. It's an easier way, and I always have a posting about Saeed. And another way, one of the most important ways you can do that is through prayer. I cannot tell you just the incredible value of praying. I really believe with all my heart God hears and answers our prayers, and I know this. Not too long ago, Saeed was put into solitary confinement, and you know he's been dealing with an internal bleeding issue. And so one day there was a group of people that wanted to silently, peacefully protest the regime, the way they are treating prisoners. And because of that, the regime in the prison responded by putting them into solitary, and Saeed was actually not a direct part of it. But you see, the goal of the Iranian regime is to get Saeed to deny his faith, to repent and return to Islam. Isn't it amazing? And this to me is the perfect contrast. The Bible invites us by a decision of our free will to accept or reject Christ. In Islam, you don't have that decision. It's made for you, and you cannot recant it. But Christianity, you have that opportunity to say yea or nay. You're not forced. There is no coercion in Christianity. Jesus says very simply, you know, stand at the door and knock. If anyone invites me, I will come in. I stand at the door of your heart and knock. Invite me in. You have that opportunity to say yes or no. I find it so hard and so difficult how NGMA does this every day. But she's supported by some wonderful Christians praying with her and a wonderful organization that's helping her out, the American Center for Law and Justice and Jay Sekulow. So please go and sign that petition and pray. Because when Saeed came out of solitary confinement, he was a different man. His issue with the blood, his issue with the bleeding, has greatly subsided. And all the prisoners that saw him recognized that something had happened. Well, I know what happened, and you know what happened. A God met him in solitary as an answer to our prayer and sustained him and strengthened him. His ordeal is far from over, and so we need to get involved in doing those little things that make the difference. Now, before I got disconnected just a few minutes ago, and I apologize for that, it's part of being on the internet. You never know. I was starting to read to you this blog I wrote for my friend in Iran, Nahid. And I just wanted to take you back to the movie Braveheart. Remember when Mel Gibson, who's playing the character William Wallace, he's there at the chopping block, as we say, and he's being told to recant and be loyal again to England and Great Britain. He's being tortured, and the executioner taunts and begs Wallace to submit to the King of England and beg for mercy. Well, you know, he's not going to do that. He's tired and exasperated. And what happens in this powerful scene? Wallace looks up at the executioner. He adamantly refuses to do that. And instead, he gives this death cry toward the audience yelling, "Freedom!" It's just a powerful scene. Well, freedom, what is freedom? Freedom is at the core of who we are as human beings. We fight. We struggle. We speak out for the right to be free. You think of another famous person in history, Patrick Henry. He was a statesman and promoter of the American Revolution. And what did he say? You all remember this. Give me liberty or give me death. That's how important this little seven-letter word is in our existence. And today we're celebrating that. I want to take just a moment in what I'm reading to you and just say I want to thank all of our troops all over the world for standing up for our freedoms, and I include the troops of Canada, of course, too, all over the world who are standing in the gap for our freedom. I wanted to say, we haven't forgotten you. We recognize the price you pay for our freedom. Well, I wanted to bring you back to Braveheart, and I wanted you to remember that scene. And if you see the movie, you'll know what I'm talking about. I want you to also think now about my freshest friend, Nahid, who lives in Iran. Like I said, she's a dedicated English supervisor and teacher, and she works hard at teaching children. Recently, I received this emotional and angry email from her. And like all other Iranians, she is struggling to survive in a culture of oppression and fear, where personal freedom is also almost non-existent. And my friend wrote this email, and she says, "I feel like we won't have a free country. I know that we won't in this country. Every single action done by people must be monitored by the government. It is ridiculous," she writes. "We should ask the government's permission if we want to die. I hate this government." That's what she says, quoting her exactly. And she also says, "You know, I feel like we are like animals who are living in a box, and when they need us to grow, they feed us. And when we won't, we're supposed to die." Oops, I think we lost me. No, he didn't lose me again. Sorry about that. She goes on to say, "In America, government, Randy, is of the people, by the people, and for the people. But here in Iran, the government is your God, and they control you from life, from birth until death." And that's exactly true. Well, what do you say to my friend? What would you say if she said those words to you? Well, I think we have a responsibility. We are freedom fighters, are we not? We fight for our freedoms, too. In Canada, it's a very, very conservative place, lots of freedom. A lot of my Iranian friends have left Iran to come to live in Canada. They love it there. Beautiful scenery, beautiful freedom. I'm thinking of my friends Seya and Caspian and Sarah, who live now in the freedom of Canada. Well, what do you do when you hear these words of Nahid? Well, I think we speak out for their human rights and freedom. And this is what I find myself doing almost every day, is talking to them on the internet, praying for their freedom. And what really gets me at the core of who I am is when I hear what Nahid is going through and I feel so helpless in many ways. My friend desperately wants cannot seem terrible, it's bad. It's a gift. That's why I call it the precious gift of freedom. Freedom is a gift from God. God wants everyone to have this freedom, both physically and spiritually. You know, 2,000 years ago, Jesus promised us a freedom we can have when we come to know him as our Lord and Savior. He said, "You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." That's a promise. Just remember that scene in Braveheart. Before his death, William Wallace cried out, "Freedom!" And this is what my friend wants. Will you cry out for her freedom? I really hope you do. Now, we've talked about my friend, and we've talked a little bit about Saeed, and I want to take this time to mention a very special friend, too. And her name is Nazrin Mohammadi. Let me tell you a little bit about Nazrin. And she used to live in Iran. She knows firsthand of what I'm speaking about today because she lived through it. And fortunately, by the grace of God, she escaped it. But not so the case for her brother. On her Facebook page, if you're her friend and you go to her page, you'll see a picture of this very handsome man dressed in a suit and tie. His name is Akbar. Unlike his sister, Akbar was not so fortunate. He was not able to escape Iran. You see, Akbar became involved with the student movement on the campuses, doing something that you and I would do for things that are unjust and not right. He spoke up for changes in the way the government was treating university students and the way the government was treating people. He did that because it's part of our human nature to speak up when things are wrong. But in Iran, the Islamic regime is your God. The supreme leader is your God. You see, And they believe in a pure Islam there, not the secular one that was under the Shah of Iran. That's why he was ousted. That was part of the reason why. And they believe in a pure Islam and also believe in the teaching that one day the Mahdi will come. One of the 12 imams was the Mahdi. He's going to return, and he's going to establish righteousness and peace. And in order for the Mahdi to return, according to Islamic doctrine in Iran, is that Iran must prepare itself. It must live for the glory of Islam. Under the Shah, there was too much secularism. We didn't have the fundamentalist Islam. Under the Shah, you didn't have the rule to wear the hijab. You didn't have to go out and be dressed that way. But when the Ayatollah came and the mullahs came, that all changed. And in 1979, Iran became a theocratic, if you will, Islamic fundamentalist nation. Oh, they said in the beginning there would be some freedom, but that wasn't true. And pretty soon women were required to wear the hijab, couldn't go out publicly without it. And very slowly but surely the rights of the people were eroded away, and Islam became not only the major dominant religion, but also the glorious religion where you are a slave of the system. Akbar was born and raised in Iran, and like the freedom fighters that lived here in America, he studied Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi. He saw in them a peaceful way to protest, not a violent way, a peaceful way. He cherished their ideals. He spoke up for freedom. He was arrested one day in 1999. When he went to Evin prison, he was interrogated, and they accused him of cooperating with the CIA and involved in throwing over the Islamic regime, and that wasn't his intent. His intent was just to have freedom, just to speak up and to say, this is what's right, this is what's wrong. But you can't do that in Iran. Eventually, they tortured him, took cables, and beat his bare feet with cables, beating him physically. And this is the way that they treat prisoners. Admit that you were here to throw over the regime. Admit that you were involved in doing all these things. Tell us what we want to hear or we're going to kill you. And eventually, in 2006, my dear friend and brother Akbar died of his injuries. The amazing thing, though, is that he kept a diary. This book I hold in my hands is a book called Ideas and Lashes, The Prison Diary of Akbar Mohammadi. This is a book written by Akbar's sister, Nazrin. The bulk of the book is in the words of Akbar himself, and when you read this book, you get to meet Akbar. You get to hear what freedom is not like in Iran. You get to hear the truth from someone who lived and died for freedom. And this is a wonderful book. It's very painful to read. It's very difficult. It's not something you can have cozy summer reading about. But nonetheless, it's a book you should read. Ideas and Lashes is a book about Akbar Mohammadi. His sister has kept his memory and his vision for hope and freedom alive. There's many, many pages in this book that she writes in the back just talking about the aftermath of his death. And one of the things I loved so much about this book was the pictures. And I want to just take a moment to tell you a little bit about what happened when George Bush, our last president, heard about Akbar. She went to the White House to meet him, and our former President George Bush recognized Akbar as being a martyr for freedom in Iran. Now, I say that in contrast to our current president, who has not openly said anything about Saeed Abedini. I remember back in 2009, he spoke outwardly about the two hitchhikers, mountain climbers in Iran that were unjustly held, and I'm glad he did. You also spoke up for another lady, Roxana Berry, who wrote a great book about her imprisonment in Iran, My Life in Captivity. But he has never said a word publicly about Saeed. There's a whole host of reasons for that. But I don't understand. What has happened to the vision of hope and freedom in my country? It's being challenged every day by economic policies by Barack Obama. And I think of Akbar, I think of a man who only wanted to breathe like we breathe, walk out in the streets like we walk out without fear, express his ideas and speak out publicly about his feelings. And he wasn't allowed to do that. It's a fundamental right and gift that God gives us freedom. But my friend was denied that. I never met Akbar, but I know his sister, a beautiful lady. And she calls me, this is her name for me, she calls me her angel. And what a humbling thing to say, because that's the title she gave her brother. And she says, I wish my angel was with me today. When you meet Matt Nazarin, a very sweet, beautiful lady, but make no mistake, when she goes public and says what's on her mind, she is someone to respect and admire. I saw a speech from her a couple of years ago on the release of this book, speaking out about her brother and freedom. A beautiful, beautiful speech. It's up on YouTube. But there's something about keeping the ideas of people alive, like Akbar. Not too long ago, my dear friend co-host Kel Fritzi had a very moving tribute to a lady in Iran. Her name, you can't forget this name because it's a name that you should know instinctively. Neda Sultan is a name that you can't forget because if you were like me in 2009, I watched the election results from Iran, and Neda was not a very politically motivated person. Her fiancé, boyfriend Caspian, and they were a strong, strong couple together. But when Ahmadinejad was reelected in a disputed election in Iran, Neda decided, I've had enough. I'm not a political person, but I need to speak up for my people. She did, in a peaceful way, just like Akbar, minding her own business, but wanting freedom in her land. There should be no reason why Mousavi was not elected. There's something wrong with this election. It's rigged. Like thousands of Iranians, she went out in the streets. One day, in the heat of Iran, on June 20th, 2009, she was in an alleyway with her music teacher and friends. She got out of the car and just to kind of towel down from the heat and just kind of stretch their legs. It was a hot day. And a shot rang out. It struck her in the chest and penetrated her to the heart. And the video of her last moments of life is a video I will absolutely never forget the rest of my life. Because of that video, that's why I do what I do. That's what connected me with the Iranians. You can't help but to be moved when you watch this very sad video, the last moments of her life struggling to live. Neda didn't commit any crime. Neda was doing what every human being in her situation would have done, standing up in a peaceful way to say, this is wrong. We need democracy here. And she paid with it, with her life. Some of us won't let her memory die. And I'm thinking of Caspi Manak, her fiancé. I'm thinking of Kel Fritzi, my dear friend, and myself, and many, many others, I'm sure. We are dedicated and committed to keeping her vision alive. Now, I said all of that to tell you this. That was 2009. This is 2013. My Iranian friends went to the polls just a few weeks ago. The results this time were a lot different. And let me explain to you why. The Iranian regime, as I mentioned to you, controls your life. The supreme leader has the final word there. When it comes to candidates for an election here in the United States, we register, we go through a process. In Iran, you must be approved by the Guardian Council and supreme leader, or you can't be a candidate. What does that mean, approved? It basically means you better not be holding any real strong opposing moderate views. Many, many candidates were turned down by the Guardian Council and the supreme leader. Now, interestingly enough, Hassan Rouhani has moderate views, meaning he feels that we should have more of an open dialogue with the United States and the West. He feels that political prisoners should be granted some freedom. Sounds pretty good on the outset. Remember, he's a dedicated member of the Nuclear Commission, and he is a dedicated, loyal follower, if you will, of the Supreme Leader. But he had a moderate tone. Why? Well, think with me. If you're the Iranian regime, do you really want a repeat of 2009? Probably not. Not that they're afraid of confronting the people there in Iran, but they just don't want the bloodshed and the negative image, because it's all about image. They want the world to know that this is a free place. It's not at all like what people say. So they touted a man out who had a moderate tone, and it worked. It stifled any uprising. It stifled a lot of protests and especially physical confrontation. Some of my friends have hope. Others, like my one friend in Iran, say mullahs are all the same. They don't care. They will say that to get your vote. Well, that sounds like a typical politician here. But what I meant to tell you in all of this is that my friends went to the polls. Now, it sounds like, hey, you know, there's some kind of democracy here. They can vote. But whoa, wait a minute. And there's the catch. In Iran, you are coerced to vote. You see, the regime basically keeps track of your political involvement. You have a little registration card that gets stamped you voted, and they know when you didn't. If you didn't vote, it's considered anti-government, and they're going to visit your house. If you did vote, you're coerced. Why? Because you could lose your government benefits and any other thing if you don't vote. So, wait a minute. Here in America, you can cast your vote. Whether you want to or not, you don't have to be coerced to come to the polls. And sadly, too many people still don't vote. They stay at home. They're not exercising their First Amendment. A lot of people don't. But in Iran, you don't have First Amendment right. You go there because you know if you don't, there's consequences. Not a democratic free election. So Rouhani here is on the scene. In August, he's going to be officially taking office. But the sad thing is that his message about moderation, well, let's put it to you this way. It's not all that meets the eye. My Canadian friends have written stories about this election, and all of them agree. Those that have lived there, they say very strongly, unless the Iranian regime is removed, there will be no freedom. I completely agree with them. Some of my friends are a little skeptical, but most of them agree. Most don't change. There is an interesting little blog about this. You can see it on my Facebook page. It's a story of my friend in Iran who didn't want to vote that day. Well, here's the problem. Her friends say, you need to go vote or you'll lose your government benefits. So, being a good Iranian, she said, I don't want to lose that. So she ran to the voting polls, and she looked at all the hosts of candidates. She said, I don't want to vote for any of them. So you know what she did? And she cast a vote for her favorite rock idol, Justin Bieber. I just want to let you know that in the Iranian election this year, Justin Bieber was on the ballot, courtesy of my friend, for president of Iran. When she told me that, I laughed, you know. I thought it was funny. And yet it's so sad, isn't it? It's so sad that she couldn't vote for who she really, really wanted to. She was told, you know, here's your options. But one of my friends did was really unique. She said, I don't like any of them. Here's who I really want to vote for. That's what we do here in America. We vote for our choice. I thought it was hilarious. And then I got to thinking about it. Justin Bieber, her president in Iran. Well, lots of young ladies and older women love his music, love him. What's wrong with that? He's a lot better than what's out there, I would agree. You would agree too, right? So there is a little bit of humor in all the seriousness that I go through. But the election in Iran, I'm thankful, was not violent. There was not the bloodshed. And I'm all thankful for that. But I feel as though there's much more deception going on than meets the eye. We will wait and see what's going to happen. I really, really hope and pray that my friends one day can walk down the streets of Iran without any fear. And that is my hope and prayer. I want to take this short break with you right now. I want you to hear a song that kind of amplifies on healing rain. It's called Ever Seen the Rain. And we'll be back in just about 3 minutes. Takes me back to my days in high school. Now you know how old I am. Ever seen the rain? That's what we need. Actually, speaking of rain here and where I live, we've had tons of it. But I'm thinking of the spiritual rain, the rain of refreshing and freedom for my friends in Iran. That's what I'm thinking of. You're listening to Cross in the Desert. I'm Randy Noble. So thank you very much from the bottom of my heart for joining me today on this broadcast, my first one. I thank from the bottom of my heart my good friend Kel Fritzy, the famous Red Fox blogger who is on the microphone twice a week, I believe on Mondays and Fridays. Very gracious lady and very, very thankful for this time. In these last 20 minutes, I want to remind you, you can call me at 347-237-4318. or 213 if you live in Canada, 943-3434. I want to spend this last 20 minutes talking to you about a couple of things that pertain so much to our subject of freedom today. I want to share with you just really briefly about a book that has absolutely changed my Christian life. It's a book entitled Captive in Iran, and this just came out, in fact, April 1st. There is a long story about this book. I don't want to go into that because, God willing, we are going to have these two beautiful ladies as a guest in the very near future on this program, and I want them to tell the story better than I can. But I'm talking about Mariam and Marzia. Mariam Rothenpur and Marzia Amirzadeh, two young Christian ladies who lived in Iran, grew up in Iran, and were never practicing Muslims, as their story goes. One day they met together in Turkey. You may say, how did they get to Turkey? Well, you don't have to have a visa to actually get into Turkey from Iran. And they met there. They were both like-minded, believing Christians, were studying theology together. And when they met, it was like a connection. They both had the same goals. What was their goals? To share Christ with Iranians. You see, there's a deep spiritual void in Iran because of the heavy-handedness of Islam, the strictness, the oppression and fear. Many Iranians are finding their hope and freedom in Christ. But they are so restricted. They can hardly get up on the internet. They're in trouble if they reveal that, of course. So Mariam and Marzia had this like-minded goal of distributing New Testaments to Iranians, secretly, of course. And I found out when I opened up the pages of this book that they, in their time together, their few years together there, they distributed over 20,000 New Testaments. And then one day, the government found out and arrested them. One of the major events I mentioned to you that got me started writing was Netta Sultan. Another major event that was very influential in my writing my books was Mariam and Marzia. One day at home from work, I looked at the TV and there was a program called the Harvest Program. And this story came up about Mariam and Marzia. Please pray for them. They're in Iranian prison. They're two Christians that are on death row to be executed and hung. And there was something about that story that struck me in the core of my being. And I remember when I wrote my book, Shining Star, A Light in the Darkness of Iran, about the underground church, the Christian underground church, I remember dedicating this little story to them. And I thought, I would love someday for them to not only be free, I would love to meet them. God has an amazing way of answering prayer. The miraculous thing is that one day Mariam and Marzia were free from Iranian prison. Now, I didn't tell you how all this happened. I want them to tell you. And when you read the book, you'll find out. One day they were freed. I didn't know what happened to them until one day in February when I found them on Facebook. And now we're friends. I haven't met them in person, but that's my prayer one day to do. But I want to tell you, this book changed my life because for 259 days, Mariam and Marzia were in Iranian prison, in Evin prison, suffering for their Christian faith. They spent that time doing something they could not do very easily on the outside. They spent that time praying and sharing the love of Christ with prostitutes, lesbians, political prisoners, and outcasts in Evin prison. And as they talk about this in the book, they say Evin prison became our church. This was a life-transforming book for me simply because they're doing, in a hostile environment under the penalty of death, they were ministering, doing something that not enough Christians do in a free, unhostile environment living here. It was a wake-up call, because where is the church? Why aren't we with the suffering and hurting, the imprisoned? Why aren't we there? Miriam and Marzeh are an excellent example to me of the faithfulness of Jesus. They were faithful to Jesus that entire time. And they weren't thinking about whether they would live or die. And they weren't afraid. And when you read this book, Captive in Iran, you will meet two ordinary Christian girls that love Jesus with all their heart. And it's a book that I'm sure will change your life too. One day soon, they are going to go, I think, to other foreign countries and minister for Christ. But one day soon, they're going to be here to talk to you. You see, I love Iran, and I can tell you stories about Iran, and I can talk to you about my friends that live there, but you have to hear from those that live there. When you hear their story, it's going to change your life forever. It's a book that's changed mine. So hopefully, very soon in the future, we're going to have Miriam and Marzeh on our program, and they're going to talk about their book, Captive in Iran. In the last few minutes here I have, I just want to share briefly with you about my book, The Rose of Nauruz. Kel Fritzi, we talked about this a week ago, but I wanted to quote from you from one of the chapters about a story. You see, my friend Tefi, or Atafi, however you want to say it, it's a Persian name, she lives in Iran, in the heart of Iran, in Tehran. Atafi has a way with words. She just does. She's an English teacher studying French, and she wants to come here and live. I asked her one time to share with me what it's like to be an Iranian girl living there. And she did exactly what I asked her to, and she scripted out in detail what it's like to live in Iran. I want to tell you, because this is in the book, The Rose of Nauruz, Atafi says, when you go out in the streets, you better be wearing the hijab properly. Why? Because if not, the morality police are going to round you up. You're going to be punished. You're going to be paying a fine. You can spend the night in jail. You're going to be treated like a prostitute, and you could go to prison. You see, if you don't have your hijab on properly, if you've got too much makeup and fingernail polish, the gossier shot will beat you. No, I'm not kidding you. They will. One day, she was out on the bus in Iran, sitting in the back. On this particular bus, you have to sit in the back. You're segregated from men, and there's a section for women. And she described in detail how hot it was, how the hijab was so uncomfortable to wear, how she was sweating. And she described in detail how the bus stopped because the gossier shah, that is the morality police, was struggling with a woman who was not complying with the Islamic dress code. They were dragging her by her feet and putting her in a van. When she shared this story with me, oh gosh, it's been over a year ago, it resonated so well with my heart, it came this book, The Rose of Nauruz. Atafi has a way with words. And there is a chapter in my book, the second chapter, and I named it after the title she gave the question she asked. When she was on this bus and she saw what was happening with the morality police, she was seeing the men sitting in a separate section in front of her, and she saw how this woman was being treated. She asked the most important question, and I called this my second chapter in The Rose of Nauruz. She said, is this what Islam has brought us? What a good question. When she looked at the foot of what Islam was doing, she asked, is this the way it's supposed to be? Is this really what Islam has brought us? And in my book, Chapter 2, I describe Behera's experience. Let me just read a little bit to you. Behera leaned back in her seat and stared out the window. She suddenly felt trapped. She wanted to escape. Those are her words. She stared at the metal horizontal bar separating the men from women. A feeling of discrimination suddenly came over her. Behera had never felt that way before until today. An overwhelming sense of frustration gripped her soul. It felt like a black cloud of despair had engulfed her whole body and was suffocating her. Sweat continued to pour down Behera's face. 1,000 thoughts raced through Behera's mind, the nuclear threat, the Gothier Shad, the fear and oppression of the government, the segregation of the sexes, and many more images. Behera began to panic. It became difficult to breathe. She had never experienced anything like this before. The bus had suddenly become a prison cell to her. Behera felt suffocated as she continued to wipe away the drops of sweat that was rolling down her cheeks. The bus turned sharply to the left and entered a looping roadway that made a complete circle known as Revolution Square. Staring out the window, Behera remembered the violent protests during the presidential election. Thousands of Iranians had gathered in Revolutionary Square, angry and frustrated at the government. They believed the election of President Akbar had been rigged and a corrupt government had ignored the vote of the people once again. There were these bloody images of police beating Iranian demonstrators without mercy and dragging them away to prison. The militia had been called in to control the angry crowds. It was an image similar to Black Friday 1979, when prisoners in Jalal Square faced off against the Iranian army that was protecting Shah. Over 64 Iranians had been killed that day. Soon after the bloody showdown, the Shah had been deported and the Ayatollah assumed power. Iran would never be the same again. A new government regime had come to power, promising democracy and freedom, but the end result was more bondage and less freedom for desperate Iranians. Behera turned her face away from the window in despair and sadness. She remembered the speech by Supreme Leader Mousavi at the end of the bloody election day. He warned that any more protests would result in lengthy incarceration at Evin Prison. Many journalists, internet bloggers, and activists were still suffering in poor health and prison without seeing their families for almost 4 years. Behera couldn't look out the window anymore. All she could see in front of her was the metal separation bar. As she once again wiped the sweat off of her face, a simple but a profound question entered her mind that she was afraid to ask herself. Is this what Islam has brought us? The simple but profound question brought frightening implications to her mind. Behera quietly pondered to herself the weight of the question, fearing what the answer might be. There are many, many women like Behera, the character of my book, The Rose of Nauruz, that are Muslims living in Iran, that see the fruit of Islam before their eyes. And they are thinking through, there must be something better. They may have been on the internet and talked to a Christian like myself. They may have read a Bible verse, whatever they found. And they feel this emptiness inside of them. And they look at the fruit of Islam and they say, is this what Islam has brought us? My friend Tefi wrote this little experience. I just rewarded it. But it's one of the most important chapters in my book. Not because it's only describing what happens in Iran, but the question it asks, is this what Islam has brought us? I have found by talking to Muslims that have become Christians, many of them say a couple of things that stand out to me. When they study the life of Jesus and they read about the way that Jesus treated women, and they contrast that with the way women are treated in Islam. And they discover there is something terribly wrong in Islam. You see, according to Islam, Jesus is not God. He is not the Son of God. He is a prophet. He's one of many. Now, he's given 50 passages in the Quran. He's mentioned at least 50 times. Muhammad, only a few compared to Jesus. That's very interesting. Why the emphasis on Jesus? But he's just a prophet. That's all. And yet, when Muslim women in particular study more about Jesus outside of the Quran, they all come to a very interesting story in the Gospel of John. It's a story about a woman in the way that Jesus treated this woman. Let me refresh your memory if you're not Bible students. You don't have to be. It's a story that most of us are familiar with. It's a woman that's caught in adultery. Actually, if we go to the Gospel of John, I will kind of refamiliarize you with this story. It's a story that's very life-changing for many Muslims that read it. And I want to read this to you. Chapter 8, John chapter 8. The scribes and the Pharisees were not friends of Jesus. They were enemies. You see, Jesus taught the truth. He always refuted the erroneous interpretations of the law. And the scribes and Pharisees were committed to a law, most of which was not God-given, but man-made. And they had unfortunately added much of their own opinions and ideas to the law of God. So by the time Jesus comes on the scene, they have a whole different belief system other than what God has revealed to them, and Jesus confronts them. And they didn't like that. In the days that Jesus walked Israel, they were constantly looking for ways to accuse him of being a false prophet so that he would be killed. And now they thought they had the perfect situation. They found a woman caught in the act of adultery. And so John writes, the scribes and Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery, and placing her in the midst, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery." Now you see, here comes the scribes and Pharisees. You ask yourself the question, why are they doing this? Well, they're trying to entrap Jesus. They think they have him now. Because, look, teacher, in the law of Moses, Moses commanded us to stone such a woman. So, what do you say? Well, okay, they have this idea that if Jesus said, well, you know, go ahead and stone her, that's what Moses said, they'll say, that's not how you've been talking to your disciples and other people. You've always been talking about being merciful and compassionate. Now you want to see this woman stoned, so you're really not who you claim to be. Ah, but if you say, no, we shouldn't stone her, Jesus, then we know that you are false. You're not following the law of Moses. You're not sent from God as you claim. We have you right where we want you. Right? Is it that simple? Really? They said this, John writes, to test him, that they might have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. Many, many scholars don't know what he wrote. Actually, the Bible doesn't say what he wrote. So anything you and I say is just going to be speculation. But when you know about the character of Jesus, you know a little bit about him, you can speculate. You know, it's not biblical to say this, but I think, and many scholars think, that he was writing in the sand the commandments and writing the names of his accusers and saying, you know, you're guilty of breaking God's law too. Who are you to bring this woman to me when you are as much hypocritical as she is? Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground, and as they continued to ask him, he stood up and said to them, and this is powerful. He's written their sins in sand, I think, and he stands up to them. And you've got to understand, see the scene, this woman is probably face down. She's so afraid. She's guilty of adultery. No one says she wasn't, but she's afraid. And Jesus says to his accuser, her accusers, let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her. Bam!
And welcome back to the program, everybody. And Randy will be right back in one moment. I am very, very proud that Randy L. Noble, with his voice, is coming to you. This man has so much to share with you. He has so much to say. He has so much knowledge, wisdom, and insight. But most importantly, Randy L. Noble, my friend Randy, he has a huge heart. I am so proud that he is here today to speak with you. And welcome back, Randy.
Hi, Carol. Looks like that I got disconnected again. And I'm back. And thank you so much for mending the store while I got disconnected. But we're back again. Where were we? Jesus just confronted the religious hypocrites, the scribes and the Pharisees. He said to them, "Let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her." You have to see this in your mind's eye. Can you imagine what they were thinking? And the expression on their faces would be worth $1 million to see. They never expected in Jesus to have a comeback. And he did. And the conviction and the embarrassment was so great, John writes, and he once more he bent down and wrote on the ground, but when they heard it, they went away one by one, beginning with the older ones, and Jesus was left alone with a woman standing before him. And there's something very beautiful here. It's like this. When the accusers have to leave because of their conviction and hypocrisy, it's just you and Jesus. You know what I mean? It's just this woman and Jesus alone. And it's like when you're alone with the Son of God, who has every right to bring judgment on us, and he doesn't. Instead, he shows mercy. The accusations are gone. The stones have been dropped. And it's just you and Jesus. Now, you can understand why a Muslim woman reading this account would be so attracted to know Jesus. You see, there's a law in Saudi Arabia, in Afghanistan, in Pakistan, in Iran, about an adulterous man or woman. They are to be publicly stoned. Can you put yourself in the place of one of these Iranian women reading this and seeing that their prophet, if you will, forgave an adulterous woman and kept her from being stoned. And instead of bringing judgment, he brings mercy. Now you know why Muslim women want to know more about Christianity. Because their founder, the Christian founder, Jesus, is a man of compassion and a man of mercy who had every right to impose the law on this woman who committed adultery. Every right. And he did not do it. You see, when you think of that, go back to the title of my show, The Cross in the Desert. And that woman's every bit like the man or woman thirsting in the desert, crying out for mercy. The heat is exasperating. Their life is about to drain out of them. And here comes Jesus and gives them living water to drink in the midst of all of this pain and suffering in the desert. Now you know why, when Muslims come to Christ, why it's such a radical transformation. Why? And they're willing to walk away from Islam to embrace Jesus. It takes a lot of courage for a Muslim to leave Islam. He's going to lose his family and his life in many cases. And that Muslim has to leave his country or her country and find a safe refuge. They need our prayers. This is why I wrote The Rose of Nauruz. This is why I wrote Shining Star. And this is why I wrote Beyond the Veil. To show who Christ is. Just like he was with a woman caught in adultery, he is merciful and full of compassion. That's my Savior. And that's who I follow. And that's why I have a program called The Cross in the Desert. I'm going to take a short little break, and we're going to rejoin The Cross in the Desert right after some music. Stick by.
Thank you.
It's good to be back. A little bit of violin music on this 4th of July celebration day. I hope you're having a great day, and whatever you do, barbecuing, watching fireworks, just be safe and have a great day and enjoy your freedom. I know that I do. And this subject matter we've been talking about today, freedom, what a wonderful thing. You know, I wanted to ask you long ago, and I didn't. I should have. Forgive me. But when you think of freedom, I'd love to hear what you have to say. What does freedom mean to you? If you have a moment and you're listening, just give me a call at 347-237-4318. I'd love to hear from you. Tell me what freedom means to you. Everyone has a different way of looking at it. So since I asked you the question, I'm under obligation to answer my own question. What does freedom mean to me? Well, freedom means to me right now what I'm doing. This is a lot of fun to me. I can say what's on my mind in a respectful way. I don't have to be afraid of someone knocking at my door and taking my computer and looking at my hard drive and taking me off to prison because I said something that disagrees with the government. Now, in saying this, let's be real honest. Where I live, our freedoms have been under attack in the last couple of months. I'm sure you've read in the news, you've heard all over about the NSC, the National Security Center, reading our emails, our phone calls, and doing all those things on the internet, and are doing it for the sake of protecting us against terrorism, okay? And you know all about Edward Snowden. You've heard all about what's going on with the IRS. I say that because while we are free here, we have a responsibility every day to fight for our freedoms, because if left unchecked, the government can try to take them away. Sure, we have the Constitution, and we have the First Amendment. All of those are protections and safeguards. And this is the limitation against government. It's saying this is what government cannot do. That's what the Constitution is. So we have that protection, but still, we have to fight for it every day. Because unless we do, I wrote a blog called Sliding Down a Slippery Slope Toward Tyranny. It's a real concern I have about how our rights and freedoms are challenged, because the government sometimes wants to be in your face. They want to have the say in your life, right? And sometimes they will say, well, now, wait a minute, we're sending in on conversations, reading emails. This is all under the guise of protecting you. Well, it may be, in one sense, a safeguard, but we also have a constitutional amendment right that guards our privacy and says the government can't just intrude in when they want to. You see, I'm saying all this to answer my own questions. What I'm doing right now is free, and I'm enjoying it, but I have a responsibility. You have a responsibility to continually remind the government of our freedoms. If we don't, it's possible we could end up one day like an Iranian situation. Now, that sounds a little extreme to some people. I don't think so. Look how our nation has changed in 5 years. Now, I'm a conservative person. I believe in limited government because of that wonderful, charitable word called freedom. I believe government has a place in enforcing the laws, and it serves as a protectorate. But the government is to be a servant of the people, by the people, for the people. Interesting speech. Actually, 150 years ago, the Gettysburg Address was given by President Lincoln. And part of that address was his mention of what I just said. Government, true government, is of the people, by the people, for the people. We're celebrating 150 years of that, thinking back to the bloodiest battle of the Civil War, Gettysburg. There is a freedom that is worth fighting for. And there is a freedom that we have to hold on to. I'm interested in what you have to say, and I really hope that if you're listening, please give me a call at 347-237-4318. I want to hear what you think about freedom. My idea of freedom is being free to realize your God-given potential and to do as you please, to do those things that bring joy and happiness. In fact, since we're speaking of freedom and we're talking about government, well, in my notes, and you know how your notes get all messed up here, I'm looking for that special quotation, and I will find it yet, from the Declaration of Independence. And that talks about the pursuit of happiness, that talks about freedom, the things that you and I enjoy, and unfortunately, we take for granted. So, if I can't find that quote at the very moment, I will, but I wanted to tell you that that's what the Declaration of Independence says, that we're all men are created equal, and because of the rights given to us by our Creator, we enjoy a lifestyle of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's freedom, and that's what we stand for. What I want to do right now, I want to read to you from my friend who gave me permission to use her name. Beautiful Persian Iranian girl. And I want to read to you something she wrote to me. I asked my Iranian friends to give their personal testimonies when I had my book signing for the Rose of Nowruz back in February. And Anafi wrote something, and this young lady wrote something to me too. I want to read to you word for word what she said because it's beautiful. She says, I'm Hengama, 27-year-old, Tehran, Iran. Talking about my country is very difficult since there is a lot to talk about and it makes me emotional, but I'll try to say it. In my country, there is truly big difference between people and government. My people are very kind, friendly, emotional, educated, and warm-blooded, but my government is the most uneducated, brutal, and selfish one ever. We don't have any social rights, freedom of talking, writing, speaking, playing, watching, and if we don't obey them, being jailed, tortured, and hanging would be our punishment. Her exact words. There is a lot of difference between being a boy or girl in my country. However, both of us are under pressure. Our wearing should be according to the government taste. If we wear light color or short dress or even makeup, ghazi or shod, will arrest us. If a girl goes out with his boyfriend and ghazi or shod arrests them, they should marry or will be lashed. Also, they should pay a fine. Segregation of the sexes in Iran, she's talking about. Here, instead of going to park, cinema, concert, or happy places, most of the time we should be sad and cry for our martyrs, our religious people who died many years ago. What she's talking about is the focus they have on the imams, like Hussein. There's a special day where people will lash themselves, thinking of what Hussein accomplished for them. So what she's trying to say is we need to focus on our imams. The government says we shouldn't have. We should focus on them. She goes on to say, however, we respect these people, but we need happiness, fun, and party too. Hengama says, here many people are in jail since they talked or wrote about people's rights or freedoms. Unfortunately, we can't do anything for them. However, we have brilliant artists, but our TV doesn't have any good programs, and all the films and news are censored here, and having a satellite dish is a crime. All my people are under economic pressure. Our payments is very low, but our prices are much too high. Because of our government's actions, all the world put a heavy boycott on our country, and this matter caused many problems for us. Problems such as limitation of buying medicine for heart ailments. She's referring to the fact that the cancer drugs that you need for people that are suffering and that horrible disease are not easily obtainable because of the sanctions. She writes, every day the cost of living is rising and people can't afford it. Most of the people know us as terrorists and have bad behavior towards us as we go to their countries. However, if they came to our country, we warmly would welcome them. We are human just like they are. There is a lot to say, but feeling of being free, happy, and respected is our biggest wish. I wish peace and freedom for the whole world, especially for my dear country, Iran. Oh, There you have it, from Hengama's own words, her own English. She echoes everything I've been saying. She took the time out to wish everyone in the world freedom and peace, even though she doesn't have much of that. Hengama is not just one among a few, she's one among millions. In Iran, the suicide rate among women is 70%. Drug use is skyrocketing. Because there's an emptiness and a spiritual void created by Islam. And I guess if there's any one good thing about it, think about it, the pressure they're under is causing them to open their eyes into the good news of the gospel. And that's a good thing. But I can't imagine living there, can you? I have to go by the testimony of my friends that share with me. And they represent a very strong section of the population. I've talked to a few friends online that are a little bit sympathetic and don't see that there's any problem in Iran. They talk about freedom. There are those that are government sympathizers. But even in their government sympatheticness, I feel a lot of times they give that answer because of fear. And they know that Facebook is monitored, and they know their actions are scrutinized. And so sometimes I think out of fear, they give the answer the government wants to hear. I can't imagine this kind of existence. I can't visualize this. I hope in some way today I've been able to put a face of my friends before your eyes. Because they're just like you and me. They're not different, but they're oppressed and they're filled with fear. And that's why when Tefi one day said, "Please be my voice," that's why I do what I do. My book, The Rose of Nowruz, is a book that I pray with all my heart that you will take the time to read one day. I'm not in the business of selling things to be selling them. That's not why I do what I do. But if it could connect with you and resonate with you and give you a heart to pray and speak out for them, then it's worth it. You see, I'm not doing the cross in the desert for my sake as much as it is for theirs. I love what my friends Miriam and Marzia said in their book, Captive in Iran. The day they were released, they came home to their little flat in Tehran. And there was an emptiness about them. They were free physically, but there was an emptiness. And I remember what they wrote in their book is because the heart was still with those in prison in Iran. Because in one sense they were saying, "I'm glad we're physically free, but my heart is still with them. I want them to be free too." And that's why they wrote this book. They said in an interview with Sean Hannity back in April, that why they're doing this is to be a voice for the voiceless. Exactly what I'm doing. And one of the things that they said to me when we first met, they never had met another American that had a heart for Iranians. It shocked them. And I'm so glad to join my heart with my dear co-host, friend Kel Fritzy, and with my friends Miriam and Marzia, because we're all doing it for the same reason. To be a voice for the voiceless. There is something within us as humans, just like Miriam and Marzia, that can't totally enjoy our freedom until those that are oppressed and in prison are enjoying it with us. There's something within our human nature that says that's not right and that's not fair. And that's why I do what I do. I think of my friends and I think of my books and I think of doing this blog talk today. And whether it's the first or the last one I ever do, I will still be very happy that I was able to talk to you. And I hope I haven't talked too much about this. I hope that what you're hearing is resonating in your heart, and that you're looking at your freedoms today and saying, you know what? I love my freedom, and I think sometimes I just take it too much for granted, because when I hear about this, I realize that there are many, many people all over the world that don't have the freedom I have. Well, it's never to make you guilty. Never, never, never feel guilty. But if it gives you pause to think about someone else in chains because they're not free, then it's worth it to have done this program today. I think one of the best things I've learned about my Canadian friends is that they have a wonderful government that recognizes the plight of Iranians just like me. Just a few weeks ago, the Canadian Parliament voted unanimously for September 1st to be a National Awareness Day for Canada for the 80,000 or more political prisoners that were slaughtered and killed by Iran in 1988. And they said that this is a crime against humanity. And they called out Iran with this bill, saying how evil this was. And that September 1st in Canada, just like Canada Day, will be a national day of recognition for Iran and the number of political prisoners that were slaughtered senselessly in 1988. Thank you, Canada, for your compassion and your recognition of human rights in Iran. And now I know why I have a good friend that's Canadian. This is a wonderful place. I've only visited your country once. This is way long ago, 1974. I went to Toronto, one of the cleanest cities at that time I've ever seen. It was a wonderful, wonderful little visit. I was only there for an hour or two, but I loved it. I loved it. Canada is a place I'd love to visit someday and to meet you maybe. One of my favorite bands of all time is in Canada. That's Rush. We are different in our viewpoint on worldviews, a mile apart, but I love their music. They are just awesome. They're my favorite band. But I just wanted to take this time before our time ended today to say thank you to the Canadian Parliament for the kind gesture of recognizing Iranians and making September 1st, I believe, a special day against crimes against humanity. Wow. And there are key people in my country, in Congress, that are taking the plight of Iranians too. I don't want to leave them out. And they too are speaking up. It's because we are a free nation and we see the plight of those that are not free. And we're saying there's something fundamentally wrong with all of this. So thank you, Canada, for what you're doing. Many, many of the people that came from Iran that live in Canada are thanking you. Thanking you from the bottom of their heart and for you doing this. Because we know how government can sometimes not reflect the will of the people. We know sometimes that government does some crazy, bizarre things. In this case, they did something that is great. There's something about recognizing human rights when they've been so severely violated like they are in Iran. And so what I want to say with the last few minutes here, I want to remember to mention some people that are suffering in Evan prison. You heard earlier from Madame Abedini about Saeed. I pray, please go to my Facebook page or go on the internet, use Bing search, whatever you use, and type in savesaeed.org and sign the petition for him. He is someone that covets your prayers. And you may say, well, what does sign this petition do? Well, these petitions go to the United Nations. There's over 600,000 plus signatures so far. We need a million. The more the signatures, the more the national awareness, the more that we say and we send a message to Iran, this is fundamentally wrong. Remember, Hussein Rouhani said he believed in the freedom of political prisoners. I'm praying that God will move on this man's heart to live up to this word. It's amazing, though, the reasons why Iranians do these things. You have to be careful. But let's just pray together for the freedom of political prisoners. Saeed Abedini, Nazrin Satouda, a human rights attorney in Iran. Behera Hadayat, a woman activist in Iran. Farshad Fathi, a Christian prisoner in Iran. And Shabnam, the lady I spoke about when I opened the show with the quote, she said that one day freedom will give birth like a child. These are the people that I speak up for and talk about. And these are the people that need our constant prayers. And I challenge you. Come to my Facebook page. Friend request me. Randy L. Noble. Very simple. Spend some time on the page. You're going to see postings about everything I'm saying. And I really appreciate your feedback. I also want to hear from you as the listener of shows you'd like to hear about in the future, because I'm open to that. The focus of Crossing the Desert is about freedom for Iranians and the suffering persecuted church. But I want to hear from you also. What do you think? Because when everything is said and done, it's what you think that matters, because you're the ones that take the time out of your busy schedule to listen to this show. So what you have to say, regardless if you agree with me or not, is very important to me, and I promise to take it seriously. I really do. So I need to hear your input. You can find me on Facebook, Randy L. Noble, or my email address, rnoble1065@sbcglobal.net. You can reach me directly on email that way, or friend request me on Facebook. It's really that simple. It has been a pleasure to be with you today. I've enjoyed every minute of this. I say thank you again, Kel Fritzy, for sharing the microphone with me. This has been an experience. And she says, I have 4 minutes left. Okay. All right. Yeah, I got to speak up and take care of all my time. This is kind of the first time I did this. So I'm going to do what she said. You can also find my blog at The Cross in the Desert, thecrossinthedesert.blogspot.com. Every one of my blogs are about the subject of Islam and about Iran. You'll find there's a constant theme about all of that. And I really hope and pray that you have a wonderful, wonderful 4th of July. Thank you so much for spending your time with me. I'll see you in a couple of more weeks. This is kind of a once-a-month thing, but I will see you in the next couple of weeks. Thank you for listening to The Cross in the Desert today. God bless you and have a fantastic 4th of July. No.